Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette dated Wednesday, September 2, 2020. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, University of Illinois, Students Illuminate Krannert to Show Solidarity. Project by those learning lighting design, part of a national event. By Anthony Zillis, Urbana. Red lights illuminated Krannert Center for the Performing Arts on Tuesday night, a symbol of solidarity with those in the live events industry. But for Brant Murray, a University of Illinois teaching assistant professor of lighting design and technology, the process of lighting the building served another purpose for students who don't have performances to light. For the community, it's really for raising awareness, Murray said. But for our students, it's a very important project because it's not something they would normally do. This type of undertaking isn't outside of Murray's expertise. He held multiple senior positions at the Lincoln Center in New York, and he organized the lighting of its exterior for events, including Fashion Week. But he hadn't taught this type of architectural lighting during his time at the U of I. This semester, though, provided a conundrum for a class that relies on physically lighting performers. Director Mike Ross announced a month ago that Krannert Center would cancel all public in-person performances for the remainder of 2020, like similar event centers around the country. The movement, known as Red Alert Restart, created the perfect alternative. Created by We Make Events, which describes itself as a coalition of trade bodies, businesses, unions, and live events workers, the event included over 1,500 buildings across the country to raise awareness for unemployed workers. We're really trying to raise awareness and advocate for change at the national level, Murray said. It was also the perfect opportunity for Murray's students to take part in a real-world project. Theirs was led by senior Cameron Koniarski and graduate student Tanner Funk. Rather than directing every move they made, Murray set them loose. They began gathering lights Friday and made sure they were set for a test run Monday. We said, take everything we've taught you so far and do it how you think it should be done, Murray said. What we put together has been done in less than 24 hours. But the point is, that's the speed at which the event industry works. If you were to rent a venue to light, you don't get it for the whole week. You have to go in, know what you're doing, get the job done, and make it look good. In a difficult time for students to enter an industry that is almost shut down, Murray is showing his students that options extend beyond the stage. No one knows what the future of the live event industry is going to be or when it's going to restart, Murray said. That's the type of education we're trying to pivot to. Illinois Impact, 61820 zip code, has most active cases in Champaign County by 294. Vermilion reports fourth death. Of 3,262 new tests given in Champaign County on Tuesday, 56 came back positive, a rate of 1.7%. Hospitalizations held at 2 for the second straight day, while recovered cases rose by 15 to 1,860. Champaign County has 545 active cases, most in Campustown. 61820 Champaign, 378, up 23. 61801 Urbana, 67, up 6. 61821 Champaign, 27, up 5. 61822 Champaign, 21, up 3. 61873, St. Joseph, 14, up 2. 61866, Rantoul, 10, up 1. 61874, Savoy, 10, up 1. 61802, Urbana, 9, no change. 61853, Mahomet, 5, no change. 61880, Tolono, 1, no change. 61845, Fuzeland, 1, no change. 61849, Homer, 1, no change. Vermilion County reported its fourth death, a 68-year-old man who had been hospitalized for a week with COVID-19. Among the six new cases the county reported Tuesday were two preschoolers and three teenagers. Douglas County health officials said that some of its new cases have been linked to large gatherings in Tuscola over the weekend, one of which was attended by a person who tested positive and violated a quarantine order. U of I testing, model in high demand. Killeen, plan is to market test. By Ben Zichterman, Urbana. During entry screening at the University of Illinois from August 15 to 24, 367 coronavirus cases were found. That was on the high end of what models developed by physicist Nigel Goldenfeld and bioengineer Sergei Maslov predicted, but still basically within range of our expectations, Goldenfeld said. Without Shield, we would not have known about these cases, and the public health officials would not have been able to move quickly, he said, referring to the U of I's testing and tracing program. However, since then, another 318 cases have been identified. This number is higher than we would like, Goldenfeld said. He said COVID-19 is spreading faster than expected because of reasons cited by campus officials at a committee meeting Monday, such as students who have tested positive taking another test in the hopes of testing negative. Two students and one fraternity have been suspended for coronavirus-related violations, and another 119 students and 11 groups are under investigation. And tests were taking longer than usual to process last week, as there wasn't an even distribution of testing throughout the week, so students have been encouraged to change their testing schedule to Wednesday and the weekend. It's also working on ways to speed up the test with new robotics in the lab and a smaller test tube. U of I System President Tim Killeen touted the U of I's program, which requires students and employees to get tested twice a week, on CNN on Tuesday. There will be outbreaks, as we know, and we want to catch them quickly and take immediate action, Killeen said. We put them in what I like to think of as comfortable isolation immediately, working with the public health authorities where they can continue their studies and they have food and they have all the medical attention on a daily basis. He said each test costs about $15 for the university, and the U of I has created an organization to market the test. In a letter Monday, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin urged the Department of Defense to partner with the U of I to help it with supply chain issues and to consider using the tests as at military facilities. There is also an effort to create mobile laboratories to be able to deploy this testing strategy as needed, which could be of use in military exercises or contingency operations, Durbin wrote. He also said that the U of I plans to set up the program at 10 labs across the state. Illinois State announced Tuesday that it is working on adopting the U of I's testing technology. ISU is planning to spend about $1 million to set up a lab in 10 weeks that can process the U of I's tests. So far, ISU has administered 4,652 tests, with 1,023 coming back positive. The university is testing symptomatic students at one site and asymptomatic students at two other sites, Monday through Friday. But due to its testing capacity, ISU isn't testing faculty and staff. With the U of I's tests, Illinois State hopes to test students, faculty, and staff at least once per week. Fighting the spread. It hit us. It's here. Area schools reacting swiftly to confirmed COVID-19 cases. Anthony Zillis. As the school drew to a close, Muhammad Seymour Superintendent Lindsay Hall began crafting an email to send to her staff, congratulating them for making it through day one of a bizarre year unscathed. Then she received the news she was dreading, even if she expected it at some point. Two students at Middletown Prairie Elementary School tested positive for COVID-19. I was like, well, I guess this is going to go, Hall said, because every day is new, every day is different. We've had so many twists and turns, and so I didn't expect it on day one, but I knew eventually we were going to have to deal with positive cases. They reacted, Hall said, by communicating with the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District and deep cleaning those rooms while students from those two classes learned in other spaces. On Tuesday, 2 weeks later, teachers and staff members stood outside the school, taking the temperatures of students as they made their way into the school. After a scary start to the school year, Middletown Prairie hasn't seen a spread in cases to this point. Muhammad Seymour was the first of four area districts to announce positive COVID-19 tests during the first few weeks of school. While each case differed, reaction had to be swift, with administrators pulling out seating charts for classrooms and buses to quickly give information to the health department for the purposes of contact tracing. "You're trying to collect information," said Paxton Buckley Lowdah Superintendent Cliff McClure, whose district reported two cases last week. "You prepare for the likelihood that something like this would happen. The procedures were in place with our health department. The procedures were in place for our school nurses. The procedures were in place for our admin team." Change of direction at Salt Fork. Salt Fork Superintendent Phil Cox thought contact tracing and quarantining would be enough when the first case was reported at the district's high school on August 22. But when three more cases were reported over the ensuing 5 days and at least one other case was suspected, the number of quarantined students began to add up. Cox worried that infections would multiply, so he decided the district would go all remote for 2 weeks. "At first, when we saw the initial cases, we thought we had a pretty good system in place with our seating charts to quickly identify who the kids were that needed to be quarantined because of exposure," Cox said. "But we just got to the point when we had the last one on Thursday, where between Saturday and Thursday, we had four positives and three in a four-day period. In addition, we were having an increasing number of students at the high school who were in quarantine as a result of the positive cases. And so we were just seeing an increasing number of kids who were at home, and we just felt like we kind of needed to do a reset at the high school only." An issue for Salt Fork is that the school can't physically fit the 214 students who were going to school in person all at once, while maintaining 6 feet of distance. Cox said the school will look at seating charts before students return to make sure space is maximized and students are spread out as much as possible. Rantoul keeping options open. In Rantoul City Schools, Superintendent Michelle Ramage made sure as few students would have to quarantine as possible. Only 12 students are allowed on a bus at a time, and half of those who choose the in-person option to go to school at one time. That meant that when Ramage received calls from two parents of J.W. Eder Junior High students telling her about positive tests, it wasn't difficult to identify the students and teachers who were within 6 feet for a period of 15 minutes, the time and distance that would require a quarantine. There were none. We were able to discover very, very quickly and very, very easily that no one was within close contact, Ramage said. Because the staff were doing what they were supposed to be doing, ensuring that students were 6 feet apart, that was why we were able to not have to send anybody else home. That I was very impressed with. We put in some pretty strict parameters from the beginning, and this is why, if we had 50 students on a bus, a lot of students would have had to go home. Even so, Ramage said that additional parents decided to switch to the remote learning option after they were notified of the cases. The inevitability of the virus invading their children's school is no longer theoretical. It hit us. It came. It's here, Ramage said. There's more realization that at any given time, you could be told that your child has to be home for 14 days. And that takes some time for some of our families who work to process. So I think they realize how quickly that can happen and give that for a reason for wanting to do it at home. Cox, who had heard reports of students meeting after school hours without masks or social distancing, hopes that realization spurs action in his community. My hope is that people will consider decisions they make outside of school and the impact of what they can have on what we're doing, Cox said. We basically said, hey, look, let's try to sacrifice for the next 2 weeks, stay home, try to make sure we're practicing social distancing, and hopefully there's light at the end of the tunnel and we can return to school on September 14. Ask the admin, a daily question for Champaign-Urbana Public Health's Julie Pride. We hear about asymptomatic cases of COVID-19 and how they help spread the virus as these carriers move around in public. This seems to be an important vector of transmission. Do seasonal flus and other viral pandemics such as SARS have a similar percentage of asymptomatic cases? Answer. What makes COVID-19 so difficult is that it can spread up to 48 hours before the appearance of any symptoms, even very mild ones. This is why masking and social distancing are so important. Flu is a bit different, but it can spread before symptoms as well. From the CDC, people with flu are most contagious in the first 3 to 4 days after their illness begins. Some otherwise healthy adults may be able to infect others beginning 1 day before symptoms develop and up to 5 to 7 days after becoming sick. Some people, especially young children and people with weakened immune systems, might be able to infect others with flu viruses for an even longer time. From the Our County section, opinion, Jim Day, Pritzker's progressive tax plan, one of biggest to face voters. With 2 months to go before the November general election, there's not a lot of conversation about how the statewide election will go in this solid Democratic state. Voting, for the most part, will be strictly a formality. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, 75, is expected to corral his fifth term, while other statewide offices, from governor on down to controller, won't be up for another vote until 2022. At the same time, the General Assembly will remain under Democratic Party control, most likely under continued supermajority control. But that doesn't mean there's not a lot on the line for the people of Illinois, as well as the governor and state legislators who run it. What drama there is, this is a multi-million dollar fight, surrounds a proposal that Governor J.B. Pritzker calls the Fair Tax and his opponents call the Blank Check Amendment. It's the governor's proposed amendment to the Illinois Constitution that would repeat the current mandate for a flat income tax and that would repeal the current mandate for a flat income tax and allow state officials to establish a series of escalating tax rates on escalating levels of income. Noting that 34 states have a progressive income tax system, Pritzker insists it's fair to impose higher taxes on upper income earners. He calls them the millionaires and billionaires who aren't paying their fair share. Fairness, of course, is in the eye of the beholder. So is the phrase blank check, which suggests, correctly in this case, that the governor and legislators would have a free hand to revise tax rates and income levels anytime they choose. The blank check aspect of the discussion frightens a lot of people who don't want to pay more themselves but don't mind other people paying more. They fear being swept up in Pritzker's tax dragnet. To get around that concern, Pritzker and company cite a new tax law that will take effect only if the progressive income tax amendment is approved. Under the pending statute, it would raise tax rates on those earning $250,000 or more from the current 4.95% flat rate to escalating rates ranging from 7.75% to 7.99%. Pritzker contends that 97% of taxpayers would pay the same or less under his plan. But the fact remains that Pritzker and legislators could change those tax rates and tax levels at any time. So it's a question of trust in a state where elected officials have shown themselves to be remarkably unworthy of trust. How much do the people of Illinois trust Pritzker and revenue-hungry legislators to keep their word if they are given carte blanche authority? Andy Shaw, the former president of the Chicago-based Better Government Association, is skeptical. He asks what Pritzker and legislators can do to regain the trust of voters who've grown increasingly cynical about their elected officials. He suggests Pritzker and legislators embrace serious reforms that bar legislators from engaging in the kind of practices that have gotten some House and Senate members in recent legal trouble. Shaw also proposed that they seriously address the issue of government downsizing in a way that would reduce costs to taxpayers. Illinois has more units of government, that is, separate taxing entities, than any other state. The number is around 7,000, which is about 2,000, or 40%, more than runner-up states like Texas and Pennsylvania, he said, noting that the cost of bureaucratic bloat is staggering. The legislature hasn't shown much appetite over the years for doing anything about either problem. When they have addressed those issues, it's been mostly lip service. Unless legislators prove they're serious, Shaw argues that passing Pritzker's amendment should be put on hold. Of course, that's not going to happen. Pritzker and company desperately want the $3 billion plus in new revenue his tax plan would generate. At the same time, The desire for more revenue is also why Pritzker's much-vaunted tax cuts are minuscule. They range from $14 to $65 a year for those earning up to $100,000 a year. Many people, of course, don't pay much attention to the details of a complicated tax issue. They hear fair tax, blank check, and millionaires and billionaires, words that stoke emotions to either get the rich or assist the needy. Pritzker has contributed $56 million plus of his multi-billion dollar fortune to feed those emotions in favor of his plan. Progressive tax opponents won't be able to spend nearly as much as Pritzker and company, but they too are expected to spend a large sum of money. But there's a lot more to it than sophisticated ad campaigns that feed suspicion of government or aggravate class envy. Voters would do well to follow the intricacies of an issue that's one of the biggest ever to confront state taxpayers. Murrell's message, passion and empathy. The timing and setting were perfect for Langston Alston. On his way to New Orleans after spending the summer painting murals in Chicago, the Uni High and University of Illinois grad made a pit stop in his hometown of Champaign at the request of a friend. On Tuesday, Alston was wrapping up a two-day project that brought color and purpose to the side of North First Street Barbershop at 204 First Street. The giant wordless mural is of three people embracing. The message, Alston said, is about loving and caring for people. It's about supporting community through passion and empathy. Passersby were impressed. I haven't had a chance to paint here in a long time, or in this part of town, said Alston, 28, who's been painting Champaign Urbana walls for years. It's exciting to me. I'm getting to say hi to a lot of people. Alston started painting at 10 a.m. Monday and was to finish by Tuesday night. He was invited by family friend Dusty Fry, who raised money to make the project possible. That article by Jim Rosso. Something on the history of our area. Area history in 1920. A fire of suspicious origin called firemen to the lunch stand at 611 South Neal Street, known as Mac's Place. When firemen arrived, they found flames leaping from a rear window that had been left open. The interior of the place was charred. The state fire marshal was called to investigate. In 1970, M.H. Keybolt, president of the Campus Businessmen's Association, appeared before the Champaign City Council to urge protection for campus businesses during the upcoming academic year. What thought has been given to protection of life and property? We would like to have a policeman assigned to the beat of the campus area, he said. City Manager Warren Browning said the city's budget for police was $236,000 greater than it was a year previous, and 10 more police positions had been authorized. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, September 2, 2020. Please stay tuned.